Good evening or afternoon, everyone. Let's get started. I don't know that we have a quorum yet, but in the interest of time and getting started earlier so everyone can get to their eventual dinner earlier, I think we can start going over the bill and officially convene the meeting once we have a quorum. With that, I will recognize Representative Smith to talk about House File Number 1.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I guess I would like to start by just moving the House File Number 1. He recommended to pass and to be re-referred to the floor for a second reading, pending any motion you would make pursuant to Rule 1.22 Fiscal Calendar Date of Action. So I'd move the bill.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Representative Smith, why don't you give us a summary, as you wish, of the bill, or a quick walk through the spreadsheet if you want to have fiscal staff do that, whichever is your pleasure.
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would like to give a general walkthrough of the provisions in the bill, and I'm going to ask Mr. Carter to take you through the spreadsheet. I also have Director Lippman here to answer any questions on the sexual predator portion, and we also have staff that can assist. Mr. Chairman, today you have in front of you House File Number 1, which incorporates many items. First, it's the appropriations bill for our courts and agencies relating to the enforcement of justice and the operation of our laws. Article 1's appropriation provide about $1.6 billion of funding for fiscal years 2006 and 2007. And those appropriations are outlined on pages 3 through 10 of the bill and pages 2 to 4 of the House research summary. Second, the bill also represents 2 years of work to revise and modernize Minnesota's system of dealing with sex offenders. And these are in Articles 2 through 7 and account for over one-third of the bill before you. Article 2 provides stronger sentencing, monitoring, and treatment provisions for controlling sex offenders. Article 3 creates a policy board and a sex offender review board. The first will develop, monitor, and amend state policies. The second will assess offenders to see which levels of further treatment, monitoring, and possible civil commitment should be recommended. Article 4 modifies the predatory offender registry and defines registration requirements for sex offenders. Article 5 permits the Department of Health Services to gain access to classified files on sex offenders so that they may assess whether potential employees or residents of care facilities may be a threat to the staff or residents of a facility. Article 6 authorizes the DHS to conduct background checks to grant waivers and impose restrictions on employees and facilities where sex offenders are present as staff or residents. Article 7 includes miscellaneous provisions on sex offenders such as trial procedures, medical exclusions, and the use of evidence. I would like to acknowledge specifically the work of Representative Kurt Zellers, who is carrying the that major portion of the bill. Also, we've received a great deal of assistance from State Director of Policy Eric Lippman on those provisions. Next, the bill includes 11 articles of policies relating to the Department of Public Safety, the Office of the State Fire Marshal, improvement of our emergency communications system, law enforcement, DNA collection, the Department of Corrections, our courts, the public defender system, child protection, sentencing policies after the U.S. Supreme Court's Blakely decision, general criminal laws, and changes in our DWI and other traffic laws. Finally, the bill contains appropriations of about $4.5 million for meth-related grants to counties, costs for short-term offenders, and funds for outreach programs to the homeless, and some intervention programs for youth. These funds are contingent on the passage of some gaming initiatives currently before the legislature. Mr. Chair and members, House File 1 reflects, I hope, will reflect the consensus in this body that the first job of any government is to provide justice and to defend the innocent from enemies of domestic tranquility. If we do not find the criminals, prove their guilt in our courts, and confine them securely for their requisite sentences, then no other job we do, whether it's in education and health and the environment, will have meaning for those in whose names we all govern. And this is why this bill is in House File Number 1. The bill reflects the earnest and civil work of 12 committee members, some who serve on this committee as well, each of whom has authorship of some provision in the bill. I want to thank them today as well. The bill, House File 1, reflects hearings on over 80 different bills, and I think we've provided you with a list of those initiatives. Mr. Chairman, I'd like at this time Mr. Carter to walk through the dollars and cents, if he will.
Sorry, Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, members, we'll be covering the spreadsheet. You should have that in your packets. And we'll start off on page one with the Supreme Court. Basically, I'll compare this to the governor's. The Supreme Court operations, the caseload increases, that is the same as the governor's. Civil legal services on line 13. Here we're going to show an increase of $10.7 million for the biennium. And this is going to be, you'll see this later on, coming from some real estate recording fees. The total for the Supreme Court for funding is $85.14 million. The Court of Appeals, this is the same as the governor's. The funding there is $16.378 million for the biennium. The district courts, we'll start out here. We have caseload increases, the same as the governor, a little over, close to $14 million, $13.842 million. We have the sex offender impact. Now, the governor had on his line, he included both the methamphetamine impact and the sex offender. He had a total of $10.8 million. The House bill, the committee has appropriated $6.157 million. For the sex offender impact and $180,000 for the methamphetamine impact. Next, we have some bills that had a cost that for the district courts. Interfering with an ambulance, there was an $81,000 a year cost for that. The public defender representation limit, that's $1.9 million. The strangulation crime, that's in the bill for the biennium, $830,000. And then the Blakely decision, the upward durational departure sentencing, that had a cost of about $810,000 for the biennium. With these changes in the bill, you'll also see 9 new judgeships. Tax court, that's on starting on line 42 of page 1. That's the same as the governor. It's a $1.452 million appropriation. Uniform Laws Commission is the next agency on line 48. Here, one of the decision items is the dues. They need money for the increase in dues, and we're funding that at $12,000 the first year and $6,000 the second year. Board of Judicial Standards on line 53. The difference from the governor is that we have an increase in their public hearing costs, and that's at $25,000 each year for a total of $554,000 for the biennium. Next, we go to page 2, and that's the Public Defense Board. It's on beginning the top of the page. We have funded their caseload increases. This was also recommended by the governor at $3.39 million. We have the sex offender impact. Once again, the governor had that included with the methamphetamine. Sex offender impact in the House is $11.828 million for the biennium. The meth impact is $700,000 for the biennium. Then we also have some other bills that have an effect on the public defender's office, the first one being the public defender representation limit. There we're showing a savings to that organization of $1.92 million for the biennium. Then they have some added costs for line 65, the strangulation crime. That's $245,000 for the biennium. The payment of defendants' attorney's fees at $120,000 for the biennium. And the upward durational departure sentencing, that's the Blakely decision to impact staff, is $742,000 for the biennium. Next, we have the Department of Public Safety. begins on line 71. The Homeland Security Emergency Management, that's the same appropriation as the governor. It's the total funding is $5.188 million. Next, we have the BCA, the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And beginning on line 86, we show a reduction there. This is from CRIMNEP and some suspense files. There's some base adjustments. That's the $4 million for the biennium. Next, we have increases for their automated fingerprint ID system. That's the APIS system, $3.851 million for the biennium. Changes to the predatory sex offender law, that is $1.71 million for the biennium. Then we have the criminal justice information audit system trail for $577,000. Next on line 90 is the DNA felony database. The DNA felony law was due to sunset this June 30th. And this fully funds that, and also adds the predatory felony of arrestees. And that is funded at 1.726 for the biennium. Next, we have live scan funding for $135,000. That's the automated fingerprint system. Next, we have meth enforcement and awareness. You heard about this in the meth bill. We are carrying the appropriations here. They're in our... this affects our tails. That is $2.40 million. And then we have some DWI changes on line 93 for a total or for appropriation of $118,000 for the biennium. The next agency is the fire marshal on page 3, the top of the page. Basically the same funding as the governor at $4.877 million. You'll also see under some statutory revenue adjustments later on in the spreadsheet that they are now going to be increasing some fees for resorts and hotels after, that are under 35 beds. Next on line 108 of page 3, we have the gambling and alcohol enforcement. The total funding for that, same as the governor, $3.544 million. The next program in public safety, beginning on line 116, is the Office of Justice Programs. It's where a lot of the grant programs come from in the department. We have the Crime Victim Assistance funding increase. That is at same as the governor, a little over $1 million for the biennium. We have the combination, the Criminal Gang Strike Force and the Narcotics Task Force at $4.748 million for the biennium. Then we also transfer in this, it, along with the governor's recommendation, the Youth Intervention Program. This was, before it was found in Representative Gunther's committee. Now they are transferring that from the Department of Employment and Economic Development to Public Safety, and that's funded for the biennium at $2.9 million. Next we have the Financial Crimes Task Force. This was a governor recommendation that the committee also approved at $600,000 for the biennium. Then the committee also, in that youth intervention program, they increased funding by $500,000 each year for a total of $1 million for the biennium. And the last one under, the last item under the Office of Justice Programs is human trafficking. This is the assessment, study, and implementation, and that's being funded at $50,000 each year. The next program is the 911 Emergency Services Program. And here the committee went along with the governor's recommendation. This is an increase in the 911 fee. Fee currently is at 40 cents. This will increase it by 25 cents for the first year and then 10 cents each year after that. On line 134, public safety, some of the other programs that are funded is the Department of Administration. We have the public safety health insurance coverage that increased the funding for the health insurance for officers that are disabled, and that is being funded at 1.347 for the biennium. Next we have was a bill for gas theft, that if you were convicted of stealing gas, you would have your driver's license suspended. There was a small cost for this of $32,000 for the biennium. It was from some programming changes. This will also be made up in revenue. This is a trunk highway funding. We'll next go to the post board on page 4 of the spreadsheet. Here we have the governor's recommendation. There also is, you'll see later on, that there's going to be $1.6 million in additional funding through some statutory fee increases, and this will be going to the local units of government for training. Also on line 150 is their technology request was funded at $140,000 for the first year only. And then they had some increased costs to maintain their services. That was funded at $179,000 for the biennium. Next item, or the next agency, is on line 154. This is the private detective board. Here the difference from the governor is that Representative Solberg had a bill on traffic escorts, and they need a one full-time equivalent for that, and that is being funded at $103,000 in addition to their base funding. Human Rights Department, that's the same as the governor at $6.98 million for the biennium. Then we have Corrections, Department of Corrections. We'll start out with their decision. Well, first of all, on line 168 is their forecast adjustment. That is $71.2 million for the biennium. Then we have decision items. We have the sex offender enforcement. If this is under institutions now. That's the program and corrections at $140,000. We have sex offender treatment, $3 million for the biennium. We have their health services increase at $7.44 million for the biennium. We have sex offender sentencing changes. This is in both, the governor had both the meth and the sex offender. We break that down. The sex offender for corrections for the first biennium is $1.51 million for their bed increases due to the sex offender law changes. Next was the meth changes, which you heard about a couple of weeks ago. That's $902,000 for the biennium. Then we have, there's some savings that was in the bonding bill from the challenge incarceration program, because the increase in beds there will result in a lower number of beds in as far as tails, and that takes place in fiscal year 08 and 09, and that's $827,000 in savings. Next, we have removal of gate money. This is for those people that have been released. It's not their first time, it's their second or third time, and that's a savings of $84,000 each year. Then we have a couple bills that have a bed impact. The first one is harassment crimes, bed impact of two beds, and that's at $45,000 for the biennium. We have the false pretense to obtain identity that results in two beds for $84,000 for the biennium. We have the identity theft penalty modification, $63,000 for the biennium. And then we have the identity theft penalty modification that goes up to five beds, two beds the first year, and then four beds for a total of $97,000 for the biennium. Community services is the next program under corrections. We'll start off with the sex offender enforcement appropriation. That is at $6.852 million for the biennium. We have the sex offender treatment added appropriations there, $3.21 million for the biennium. We have meth treatment grants. This was an amendment in committee. Meth treatment grants for counties. That's at $550,000 for the biennium. Then we have some meth law enforcement and supervision costs. This was also an amendment in committee for, same thing, for $550,000 for the biennium. Next we'll go to the next page, page 5. The last program in corrections is operation support. It's the same as the governor. The total appropriation there is a little over $31 million for the biennium. Total corrections for the biennium on line 212 is $825 million for the biennium. Next sentencing guidelines, there is a small increase there. It's different from the governor, and that increase is for their increased cost, $84,000 for the biennium. So you can see the totals on line 230. It total is $1,693,197,000. The general fund on line 229 shows that we are about $14.5 million over the governor in spending. However, now we're going to go down to the revenue adjustments, which will lower that. And on line 232, we have the increase in the fine surcharge. The surcharge is currently at $60. The governor recommended a $10 increase, and the committee went along with that increase. That brings in about $11.4 million for the biennium. Next, we have criminal justice special projects account that's going to the general fund. That brings in about $1.5 million for the biennium. On line 234, we have the real estate recording fee increase. This currently is at $4.50. This will raise it for $4. It will bring in $11.8 million. The majority of that money is going to the to civil legal for their increased appropriation. Next, we have the traffic escorts. This is their licensing fee. You saw that under the private detective board. This brings in to the general fund $291,000. On line 236, this is we saw some appropriations for interfering with an ambulance. There was some cost, but it also brings in fine money and surcharge money to the tune of $182,000 for the biennium. Next, we have the Pulse Board. Because they're a special revenue fund, their increase is simply offset in this line, and that's a decrease in revenue of $319,000 for the biennium. The last one was an amendment in committee. This was an increase in the parking surcharge, and it goes from $3 to $4, so a $1 increase is projected to bring in $1.1 million for the biennium. This money was used to fund some of the methamphetamine, the supervision, and the grants to counties. So you can see, Mr. Chair and members, on line 244, the target was 1.655282. The committee is $37,000 below the target. Some other revenue adjustments. I just want to go over our gas theft suspension. This is the driver's license, the $20 fee to get your driver's license. That brings in $48,000 for the biennium. And then I just want to cover briefly other statutory fee increases that are in the bill. We have the criminal justice data network fee continuation, $150,000. We have the fire marshal. This is the inspection of the smaller hotels, motels, and resorts. That brings in $480,000. Then we have the non-DWI reinstatement fee. That brings in close to $1.6 million. This goes to the Post Board for the training of local law enforcement officers. Then we also have Representative Meslow's bill, the Ramsey County $1 surcharge increase. This is going to be used by Ramsey County, and it will bring in about $202,000. Then, members, on the last page, we have option B. This was if the committee had an additional $4.5 million to spend. And the committee decided that if that goes through, they would spend that on beginning on line 267, the Department of Corrections, methamphetamine grants to counties for $1.5 million for the biennium. They would also fund the law enforcement and supervision grants to counties for methamphetamine, $1.5 million for the biennium. And in addition to that, they would fund short-term offender grants. They would increase that, I think it's at a little over $1.2 million. They would increase that by $1 million or $500,000 each year. Then in public safety, they would fund homeless outreach grants at $300,000 for the biennium and increase funding for the youth intervention or the YIPA program of $100,000 each year. So those total out to $4.5
million. Before I recognize Representative Solberg, let me officially start the meeting. A clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the April 20th meeting before us. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to those minutes? seeing none, Representative Beard moves approval of the minutes. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chairman, first of all, can I make a request of the fiscal staff? That's too late for this one, but I noticed in the next bill, and I would ask in the other bills that come, that we also have a column that doesn't only say committee recommendation compared to the governor's proposal, but committee recommendation compared to current law as well, because I think that gives us more information. And I noticed we have done that on the jobs bill, so we get a full picture of what's happening. I'd appreciate that in the future bills if the staff would do that. And I think it's readily available for them.
Representative Solberg, if it's readily available, we'll see what we can do.
Mr. Chair, on that point, we do have something that I can hand out. In fact, I think I gave it to the research people of both caucuses that have it, but we can hand it out to with the differences.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, just a couple of questions to begin with. On line 176, 77, 78, and so forth, as we're going through there, the testimony was that for these different offenses, there was an increase of 2 beds. Why does one increase of 2 beds cost $45,000 and one $84,000 and one $163,000 and one $90,000 for the same 2 beds? Is it the length of time in their bed?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, that if they are different, because of it probably is when they're coming on board, Representative Solberg, and it's. But like harassment crimes, it's the one bed and then 2 beds, you know, the next year, the false pretense to obtain identity on 243 or line 178 is 2 beds. So, I mean, it is, they have a formula for that, and hopefully they are right.
But, Mr. Chair, is there a different effective date for those particular crimes, or do we expect harassment crimes to occur later in the biennium?
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, no, I think they all have the same effective date, but I'll double-check the fiscal notes on those. And
I noticed going out, Mr. Chair and Mr. Carter, that they're all the same, but it was kind of strange coming in that there's different beds. There's still 2 beds, and it was a different cost, so I'm just kind of curious on that. And then, Mr. Chairman, I have the floor. I have how much is the governor raising in an additional fee for I wonder if someone can pass this on in the criminal justice the surcharge.
Mr. Carter or Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I think you're talking about the fine surcharge. That
Yeah, on line 232.
Right, that fee is brings in for the biennium about $11.4
million. Mr. Chair,
Representative Solberg,
I noticed, Mr. Carter, that the fee, the first biennium is 4.9, but the governor said, well, I guess he said the same. For that, I'm passing out a ticket that somebody got. I think it was in Ramsey County for on January 6th. He was before Judge Dickinson. An obstructed windshield. The fine was $0. So I suppose the guy left the judge real happy. He was innocent. He had fined $0. But he had to pay $65. And now, with this proposal, he gets to pay $75. I don't know. I feel for that guy that had the zero fine because he was innocent. Do you suppose he's happy with the fee or the new fee that's coming in, or do you suppose he considers it a tax? We can all have fees, but I mean, this is. You know, if you have a $10 additional fee or a $50 additional fee and a fine of $70 or $150 or $90, I can see that, you know, the guy says, well, I did something wrong and I really got nailed. Or if it's a DWI, it's $900 or $1,000, and I have to pay a little bit more fee. Fine. But here's the guy who's innocent. He has to pay $65, and the governor is going to raise another $11 million on this type of backs of these type of people.
How much now?
And it's kind of an interesting concept of not having a tax increase, but I bet you that guy was really happy. I guess I'll point that out as you look on the increased surcharge on line 232, we're raising another $11.4 million on this poor guy's back.
Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to ask something along the same lines, but I would like a total of the fines, surcharges, and fees and that sort of increase. Can you give us a total on that?
Mr. Carter?
Mr. Carter.
Or Senator Smith.
Yeah. Representative Earhart, do you mean just the total for the revenue that we're generating in this bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I'm trying to figure out how many new fines, surcharges, and fees we're attaching to this bill. Total.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I think for our total for the going to the general fund, it's $25.954 million. Then you also have some statutory fee increases too that amount to a little over $2.4 million.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if we're going to break our record of 2 years ago. So I'm trying to keep track of on the various bills how many more fees, but not tax increases, we're putting on the various bills. That's. I thank you very much for that figure. You're going to have to step it up, though, if you're going to, from your aspect, we're going to break the record. We need more.
If there's no further discussion at this time, we do have some amendments. Oh, Representative Gorman.
Mr. Chair, did this bill go to the fee committee?
Representative Gorman, I don't think it's been set up yet, has it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I apologize, Mr. Chair, for the interruption.
Oh, I know you want to chair that one, too, Representative Gorman.
I don't have anything else going on right now in capital investment. I'd be happy to.
Representative Carcavina, before we get to amendments, I mean, I was going to go along the lines of what Representative Earhart said, because if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but almost all the other bills coming through here are seeing actual cuts. In K-12, you could argue that there's increases if you don't count the property tax increases. But, you know, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg asked for a column to look at the base budgets of the previous biennium, which I believe in my 19th year of being here was always in the spreadsheet. And we don't have any way of knowing, any of us, other than I guess this is being passed out now, how much the Judiciary Crime Finance Bill actually goes up over previous spending. So, Mr. Carter, Representative Earhart asked you how much is in here in new fees, and you said about a little over 28 million with the dedicated and the new. What's the total spending for this biennium versus last biennium in new spending for this new cottage industry that I call the crime, sports, correction, cops, whatever you want to call it, the only place where you get bumps around this state anymore. What's the total? Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Senator Riccovina. We are about, from the spending, without the forecast adjustments, we are about $231 million over the spending from the last biennium.
So we've found money then to take care of criminals and everybody else involved in the system to the tune of about $150 million a biennium. And, you know, members, last week I called my mom, who's now in the nursing home, asked her how she was doing. Hi, Ma, how are you? And then I said, what'd you have for supper tonight? Well, we had cold sandwiches, Tommy, she said, because, you know, I suppose my mom be eating bologna sandwiches 3 or 4 times a week.
because we can't find money. Those people haven't had an increase for 3 years in nursing homes. But we can find it through fees in that year, like Representative Solberg pointed out, even when you're found innocent. I'm just curious, Mr. Carter, because I heard the governor say the other day that when I'm on the Compensation Council and we were going to give him a raise and us legislators, and there's no money in Representative Seifert's bill for increases for any public employees, and there's probably none in the Health and Human Service bill for nursing homes and, you know, those types of jobs. But I'm curious, are there pay increases for for judges in this bill? Do they go up from last biennium? Do judges get an increase in 06, this year 06 and 07 versus 04 and 05?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, on page 4 of the bill, lines 10 to 28, there's your answer. The language provides for salaries of judges to be increased by the average of the percentage increase in total compensation for state employees provided in negotiated collective bargaining agreements.
Excuse me, where was that again?
Page 4, lines 10, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, page 4, beginning at line 10.
So, Mr. Chair, then...
Representative Rukavina.
The governor's, if I'm not mistaken, the governor's salary has been frozen in our salary since 96 or 7, I'm sure. But... And I think the governor's salary is frozen at $120,000. What's the Supreme Court Justice's salary going to be then, based on this language?
Representative Smith or Mr. Carter?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I believe the Supreme Court is at $136,000, and a trial court is at $118,000. $118,000 and $119,000 per year. Prior to the increases, and I'm speaking from memory here, and I may be wrong, but prior to the increases over the last decade, Minnesota ranked roughly in the lower half compared to other states. The last increase or two got Minnesota into the above the half, and so I guess the theory is not to let the judges fall back into a position where it would be even less desirable, and we're playing catch-up with their salaries.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm not saying judges don't deserve to make a decent living, but I find it kind of reprehensible that the young lady taking care of my mother in the nursing home and changing adult diapers and feeding people that drool on themselves get nothing, and somebody making 116 or whatever is going to 118. I hope Representative or Governor Plante remembers that he didn't get a raise, but evidently his spouse gets one in this bill, and you know, it's kind of disappointing to hear him say that state employees and nursing home employees and teachers and everybody else don't get a raise, and he doesn't either, but he forgot to tell everybody in the state his wife automatically gets one. It's pretty good to know. Thank you. Bill Pinty here. Thank you very much for that information.
Representative Bradley, to that point?
Yes, Mr. Chair, to that point. Representative Rukavina, you'll be happy to vote for the health bill that does give about a 5% total increase over the biennium to people in nursing homes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I'll believe it when I see it, because I've seen way too much monopoly money around here that doesn't end up anywhere near where it's supposed to. So,
Representative Holberg.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and Chair Smith, or Mr. Carter, can you tell us what the provisions are in the Trunk Highway Fund with the gas theft, and then also tell me if you are proposing any increases to the driver's license fees?
Mr.
Chair, Representative Holberg, there was a provision in the public safety bill that they would suspend driver's licenses for running off without paying your gas bill. And their appropriation was mainly $31,000 for the first year for mainly programming costs. I think it was $30,000 and then $1,000 in mailing costs. And you'll see that the tails on that. But it also brings in on revenue, it more than covers that. The revenue for is $24,000 each year that it brings in. And this is the $20 that one has to pay to get the license back. And also, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, on the dollar increase in the driver's license, that was not included in this bill.
All right. Thank you very much.
Representative Holberg.
Mr. Chair, under current law, Mr. Carter, Mr. Smith, how do I get my driver's license revoked? What kind of offense do I have to do in order to get my driver's license revoked?
Representative Smith?
I mean, maybe not pay my child support, which I've already done, since I raised all my kids. And how do I get my driver's license? What kind of offense do I have to have to get a driver's license revoked?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smallberg, I don't know that I can give you an encompassing answer, but you could start by not paying a traffic ticket, I suppose, or get involved with the DWI law and not fulfill any time or fine there.
Mr. Chairman, I need to have some clarification on when I get my driver's license revoked if I accidentally drive away without paying the gas. Am I arrested? Do I get a chance to have restitution first? What kind of language is... I mean, I want to protect the gas station guy, too, but...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
We've had some discussion now on the gasoline theft, and I believe you'll find reference to that on page 276, line 21. That comes from a House file 1289 with the author of Representative Ellison, who offered that in our committee, and the committee chose to include it. Now, I will look at that line myself and see if I can answer your question.
So, Mr. Chairman, it does require that the court have a charge, and the court determines that it was indeed a theft. So it's not just an administrative. I'm going down it. I don't want to have an administrative penalty.
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Smith,
Solberg, this does call for a 30-day suspension upon adjudication of theft under the statute. So it is a crime, is the result of a crime where your license would be removed under this provision.
And Mr. Chairman, can they be removed by administrative, or is it strictly judicial?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative
Solberg, I believe it's not administrative, it would be adjudication.
Thank you.
Representative Otrema.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have some questions of clarification. And it goes back to Representative Solberg's spreadsheet here on the surcharges. My brother-in-law the other day got stopped for obstructed windshield because his rosary was hanging on the rearview mirror. So now is he going to get fined $75 for having that rosary on his mirror?
Mr. Carter.
Your
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I sat in on some Ramsey County hearings, and there was a fine, if I remember right, for obstructing the windshield. I believe it was a $25 fine. And on top of that, right now, there is a $60 surcharge that you would have to pay. That is, you cannot waive that. And then in addition to that, there is a law library fee that varies, I think it's from $5 to about $13, and that depends on the county that you're in.
So, Mr. Chair, will our parking permits be called obstruction of windshields?
No.
Representative Smith,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Otremba, I don't know that, frankly, I don't know what the law says if it distinguishes, but I know that my son ran afoul of the same thing, but it was not his student parking. It was some other extraneous matter. We do have there is a law that predates both you and I that prohibits hanging things from your mirror.
So, and my concern, Mr. Chair, is that there's a zero fine. What will stop someone from giving you a warning to collect that $75. That's a concern.
Mr. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Trenum, I believe if it's a warning ticket, you are not issued a ticket, and therefore the surcharge would not attach.
Thank you.
Hey, Representative Paymark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like Mr. Carter to speak a little bit about what perhaps is the largest expenditure in this bill. As you know, the two big drivers this year with crime prevention is the meth bill that we passed. And, of course, this is has all the sex offender changes. And, Mr. Carter, just for the edification of the committee, if you could just speak briefly about the financial impact of the Zeller's bill, which is now incorporated into House File 1, which, from a policy perspective, in certain circumstances, a first offender committing a sex crime would be committed to incarceration for the rest of their life without the possibility of parole. And we all know about how emotional the whole Drew Shajin murder impacted the state, and we're trying to get our hands around how to ensure that Rodriguez doesn't get out of our prisons. This was one idea, just to commit individuals to prison for life on a first offense. But can you just talk a little bit about the expense of this and the indeterminate sentencing? Because from the fiscal note, it looks like in the future we're going to be spending upwards of $200 million a year just for beds at the Department of Corrections, which doesn't account for court costs, probation, and associated criminal justice costs. So could you just give us like an idea in the next 10 years or so how much we're going to be spending?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tamar, the House File 1, and especially the sex offender provisions, I can show you this for the first two bienniums, and then we'll just talk overall about the number of beds, the possibility of the number of beds. But this bill funds $34.4 million for the first biennium. In the next biennium, fiscal year 08 and 09, that total is going to be close to about $46 million. You asked about the beds in the fiscal note. They're projected to be by way out, now this is 2061, from about 33,858 to 7,478 beds. Now this is an estimate, then that's what sentencing guidelines in the Department of Corrections had in their fiscal note.
78. Mr. Chair, I think we all want to do something about the worst of the worst of sex offenders in the state of Minnesota. The question is, it's both a policy one, but also a fiscal one as to whether we can afford the policy if we're looking at spending $200 million a year. That's just for Department of Corrections. Our children are going to pay for it, and our children's children are going to be paying for what we probably will do this legislative session.
I think I had seen Representative Walker's hand before, but I don't see her right now. Seeing no further discussion, maybe we can go to amendments, and we'll go back to the bill. All right, members, the first amendment I'd like to take up is the A-76 amendment, and the chair will move the A-76 amendment. Members, the A-76 amendment is a variety of items. Should be passed out to you. Everyone should have this. Make some technical changes to dollar figures regarding the parking surcharge that conforms to what is actually in the bill in the first few lines. Make some technical changes in the rest of the first page down to line 23. Dealing with the sex offender language. As a proposal from the Office of Pipeline Safety requiring fine disputes to be heard in small claims court, has a provision that basically is what passed through the bonding committee regarding the expansion of the 800 megahertz system and the bonding that is done for that and the expansion of some of that system to greater Minnesota. We've got Representative Murphy's request for language concerning indeterminate sentencing reports, some changes to the effective date for the gang strike force repealing, and a deletion of the requirement that the financial crimes strike force appoint the current commander. Any discussion to the A76 amendment? Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I'm curious. I've been going through the bill and your amendment and looking at lines on the amendment, page 1, lines 3 through 6, and it appears that you're reducing meth treatment grants and meth law enforcement supervision grants, and I'm curious about that reduction. I have in front of me the amendment that was passed in Representative Smith's committee that actually put this money into the bill, so I'm curious your explanation for removing that.
Well, I was under the understanding that this was a technical change to conform to what was in the bill. Maybe I can ask Mr. Carter to explain.
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is a technical change. In the bill on page 4, or on the spreadsheet, page 4, 193 and 194, you'll see the meth treatment grants for counties and the meth law enforcement supervision grants, and that is the appropriate funding. What happened there, I think, is that plan B, option B, was put into the bill by mistake. So remember, on option B is if we have that additional $4.5 million, then it would be, it was a little more.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Kelleher.
I am concerned because it doesn't seem to jive with this amendment that was passed in the committee on a reconsideration. It seems pretty clear what the intent of the committee was, which was to go at this level of funding. And, I sort of had some very serious concerns over Representative Johnson's bill when it was in this committee, the lack of treatment for methamphetamine, and I don't have that at all, that concern assuaged by reducing the amount of money in this bill. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'm looking for other members' discussion on this, but I think this is a pretty significant change from what the committee intended to do. So, I mean, I'm still not getting, I understand the line on the spreadsheet, but I have an amendment in front of me that the committee passed. And that seems like that's the intent of Representative Smith's committee.
Well, Representative Keller, I guess I'm not aware of the discussion that you're speaking of, but let me recognize Representative Smith.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we're going to need to back up and clarify the previous answers. I'd like Mr. Carter to do that now.
Mr. Carter.
I was just informed by Mr. Diebold, and this is right, that this was an amendment by Representative Hillstrom, and what happened in committee is that I think she had the increase in the parking surcharge. It was by $4, $5, and the members did not go along with that amendment. They lowered it to a $1 increase. So that's why. And then the revisor, we had that in the original bill, the revisor somehow didn't change it. So
Representative Kelleher
and Mr. Carter, so what you're telling me here is, and I do have the original amendment in front of me, that when the reduction happened then on page 224, which I believe may be on page 231 now of the bill, I'm trying to track this back, there was a $5 increase and it went down to $1, and so then the bill isn't in balance. But Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I guess I'm still concerned here because the committee clearly voted on an amendment at a funding level of $1,025,000 and $1,005,000 for the second year in both of these categories, and the intent of the committee seems to be to fund closer to that level. So yes, I understand the technical piece of this to balance the bill, but is this really enough money to get the job done, Representative Smith?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, the intent of the committee reflected a decrease in the surcharge, and therefore the numbers were accordingly decreased.
Representative Solberg.
If Representative Kelleher is finished.
Yeah. For now.
Mr. Chair, on your amendment, page 3, lines 16 through 21, you're designating the next part of the 800 megahertz to that particular district. And I know we have a board that kind of makes some determinations, the statewide radio board. And I know my county has been anxiously awaiting and attempting to get that backbone into place as well. As this, when you designate the counties of Benton, Sherman, Stern, and Wright, are they the next ones on the list of the board to have that backbone?
Let me speak to that, Representative Solberg. Actually, within the current expansion plan, if the language was the way it, if we left the language the way it is, it would be the Central Patrol District or the St. Cloud Patrol District, which is actually not only those four counties, but a number of other counties going out to the Dakota border that are west of Stearns County, as well as the southeast corner of the state, which includes Rochester. And I put this language in here to save money because it's my view that while the St. Cloud area itself would benefit from this 800 megahertz system, I'm not sure that the real rural part of the Central Patrol District needs this, or at least needs it right now. I do think that there are other regional centers in the state that should have it. I hope that we can move this out to Duluth and Mankato and the Iron Range and some of the other regional centers. It is a very expensive system. Maybe Representative Riccovina doesn't want it. All right. But some of the really more rural parts of the state, I think, can be served through other technologies. So this language basically slims down the Central Municipal Patrol District that was otherwise in the bill the way it was.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we may be saving money, but I need to have that saving money then. It is an issue of a revenue bond that's paid back for by those counties, and my concern is that I know we've had over the last few years a fight over the makeup of the board and the authority of the board, and I didn't have an oar in that water either, if you care less. But if they have made a determination, and my understanding from about 4 years ago was that the Rochester area was the next one on the list to get the 800 megahertz. And so are they not on this? Are we changing what the board that we should have for priorities?
Representative Solberg, no. Rochester is included in here. It may not be in this amendment because they are otherwise included in the bill. But Rochester and the St. Cloud Patrol Districts, those two patrol districts are the next ones that are designated. This language just says that not all of the St. Cloud Patrol District is going to qualify immediately. So it slims down the St. Cloud Patrol District. Leaves the Rochester one in place the way it was contemplated.
Well, Mr. Chairman, how about Representative Hamilton's district and others in that they were included, I understood, in the St. Paul district? Is that correct? The St. Cloud district?
I don't believe that Representative Hamilton's is included in the St. Cloud district. No, that would be the extreme southwest part of the state.
Which counties are you taking out of the St. Cloud district?
Representative Solberg, I guess I can't give them all to you, but it would be, I think, maybe Grant and Pope and Traverse, whatever is exactly to the west of Stearns County going out to the Dakota border.
Mr. Chairman, in the revenue bonds, is there enough to do those?
Representative Solberg, I guess I'm not entirely sure. I think the revenue bonds were designed to just cover this part of the Central Minnesota District. I know that the fiscal note we have for the sales tax exemption we're pursuing on it is for only this part of the Central Patrol District. I guess I'm not sure about the revenue bonds.
And then just one other thing. We've had some controversy in the metropolitan area when we instituted the 800 megahertz, it was supposed to be for the state obligation, the backbone for the highway patrol and conservation officers, and local units of government, the sheriff's department and the cities and so forth, were supposed to pay their own way to come into that backbone. Are there funds in here for the local units of government, or are they continuing on, or that increase from 25% is that do those funds go to this?
Representative Stolberg, basically the greater Minnesota cities and counties that are in this are treated the same way as the metro area. They do have to come up with, I believe, a 50% match of the cost.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Other discussion to the amendment. Representative Regavina.
Mr. Chair, I was just you mentioned that dollar parking fee surcharge, and you know, it's ironic that it's going up another dollar, because I finally had constituents this weekend talking to me about their $5 parking ticket being $8, and where does the $3 to the state general fund go? And I told them, well, it goes to, you know, the new cottage industry, as I call it, but now it's going to $4. And you mentioned, Mr. Carter, that dollar increase was for the methamphetamine bill. I guess my philosophical question to either Representative Smith or you, Mr. Chair, as you're offering the amendment, is why is it the responsibility of somebody that gets a parking ticket to fund the methamphetamine bill in this state? Isn't it society's responsibility as a general tax of some kind to fund are most parking people that get parking tickets methamphetamine users?
Well, Representative Rukavina, I think I'll defer that question to Representative Smith. It was my understanding that this portion of the amendment was a technical amendment. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I've lost track of his question.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, if the $1 parking fee surcharge is all going to fund methamphetamine, the methamphetamine bill, my question to you is, why are people that get parking tickets in this state responsible for funding methamphetamine instead of all the taxpayers? Are methamphetamine users more prone to get parking tickets, or are people that get parking tickets all methamphetamine users? Please justify this to me.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Thank you. I got the question that time. The surcharge is aimed at sending or extending money to counties to deal with treatment and enforcement.
And, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rubino.
And that's fine. Counties, if you pass a bill, as I've said here in this committee, you should have the intestinal fortitude to put the money with it, which is not going on in any of these bills, but that's, you know, I'm off on a tangent. I digress. So my question to you is, why are we funding that with parking ticket surcharges? Why isn't it a income tax increase, or maybe we could steal the money out of the school trust or something? Representative Sikora, we could take the money out of the school trust to pay for methamphetamine. I mean, it's everybody's money, but my question is a philosophical question to this, the Republican leadership here in this committee. Why is it the responsibility of somebody who gets a parking ticket to pay for methamphetamine use in this state? That's a simple question. Would most people in the audience understand what I'm saying that aren't lawyers here? Raise your hand. You know? Come on, Jay, raise your hand out there. You're with there. Hey, I got people with me. They can understand it. The press won't report this. They're here, but they won't say anything about this. We know that. So.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Smith,
Representative Rukavina, I think I would direct your attention to three portions of the bill on pages 9, 219, and 229. As a result of House File 2351, Representative Hillstrom, this language is in our bill.
Well, Representative Hillstrom is in the minority, so again, is there a reason why, and the majority thinks that parking tickets people that get parking tickets. See, I guess I'm just making a point that makes the point, that for the sake of making a point, and that is, members, when you, and I will ask this question later, when you start funding the criminal justice system with unfair fees and fines and forfeitures, it's dangerous, because then common sense doesn't prevail. And I know, I saw the president of the Peace and Police Officers Association out there, the pretty big guy and easy to see, and I'm sure that his members really don't want to have to give parking tickets to pay for methamphetamine, the methamphetamine bill, but now they have to, so I guess that's point.
All right, Representative Roto Tavina made his point, that makes a point for the sake of making a point.
Thank you.
Representative Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, back to this issue of the meth treatment grants and law enforcement and supervision grants. Is this the only place where we are funding meth treatment and these law enforcement supervision grants this year?
Representative Keller, I think that's the only place in our bill that we're addressing that yet.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
I have to say that I have a concern when we know that the impact, and I was stopped 5 times in Lunds on Saturday over the meth bill that we passed. It was unbelievable. 3 people I knew, 2 people who took the time to introduce themselves to me, to tell me just, you know, how stupid we were for banning their Sudafed. But when doing that, one of them said to me, I can't believe that the impact of this stuff is what the BCA told us it is, $177 million a year. So the impact on communities is $177 million a year, and what we're going to do towards treatment is $250,000 and $300,000 a year. I'm not quite sure that that gets the job done, Representative Smith, based on the testimony we've had and the testimony that these treatment programs are often needing to be much longer than the 28-day treatment programs that other folks who are addicted to other substances go through. So I'm very curious about what you heard about need versus the amount of money in this bill for treatment.
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keller, I'm looking at a sheet prepared by our fiscal analyst, and the methamphetamine fiscal implications are carried in various bills. For example, I'm looking at health. Looks like they're carrying money for technical assistance on meth lab cleanup, $200,000 for the biennium. In our the bill that's before you now, corrections is $902,000, and these are dollars and thousands. Board of Public Defense has a meth trial team. Human Services would have a grant program for treatment. Employment and Economic Development bill has laboratory cleanup revolving fund, and others listed here. District courts, I see a reference. We've got other meth funding found in public safety, various awareness programs, grants, so it's carried not just in this bill, but in other ones as well.
Oh, Mr. Representative Smith, I'm not trying to play some sort of minority game here today. I have an honest concern about how we heard when Representative Johnson had his bill up about what we need to do in terms of penalties and those sorts of things, but then today we're seeing an amendment to reduce what seems like a meager amount going towards treatment, and I'm almost speechless about it. I mean, I understand that some of these other bills are funding other pieces of it, but I... I think we're not necessarily doing what we should be doing here in terms of trying to really solve this problem.
Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Okay, the next amendment comes from Representative Solberg. Representative Solberg moves what I think is the A-78 amendment. Is that right, Representative Solberg?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would move that amendment.
Representative Solberg moves the A-78 amendment.
And members, we had some discussion a couple of years ago when the fees were instituted from the fire marshal. And my understanding is that before that, the fire marshal inspection was funded from a surcharge on our insurance. I don't think we ever did away with the surcharge on the insurance for the fire marshal, but to put that money that was supposed to go to the fire marshal's budget into the general fund a couple years ago. And as we put in a new fee for inspection of hotels and others, there was a discussion 2 years ago on whether or not that fee should be extended to small resorts. And we made a determination 2 years ago to not go to small resorts or small campgrounds, dormitories. We're back again this year extending that fee, although it be somewhat smaller than it was a couple of years ago, to the small resorts and dormitories in church camps. This takes out the small resorts. Again, you can extend the dormitories with 35 or more rooms. That would be larger campsites, I would imagine. But quite frankly, I think resorts, the ma-and-pa resorts in Minnesota are struggling. Their property taxes are going out of the sky. They're trying their best to stay in business. And we've lost a great deal of them in the last 2 years again. And this has just put an additional burden on the very small resorts. So what I'm doing is taking that out. I understand it's a cut in the special revenue fund, but it does not affect the general fund at all. And it's a way of helping protect the resorts. I visited with Representative Pennis. I know it affects her district. I'm sure Representative Howes has an interest. I know Representative Anderson, myself, probably Representative Erickson, and others that have small resorts in our particularly northern part of the district, but there are small resorts in other areas, Detroit Lakes area. Representative Nornes sure has concern about this, and so I'm just removing that additional fee. This one's spelled FEE for the inspection. I'd appreciate your support.
Discussion to the amendment. Representative Smith?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess my comments would be to pass this amendment would require the fire marshal to continue making the inspections of those places to make sure they're safe. Would not allow the fire marshal to collect a fee. It would create a hole in the budget, as we've drawn up here, at $240,000 per year for a total of $480,000. So if you want to require the fire marshal to continue making inspections and not collect a fee, then pass the amendment. If you want to sustain the numbers that we have, then I would suggest you defeat the amendment.
Okay, member, just to be clear, as I understand Representative Smith, this is not general fund money. This is special revenue money. So while it would create a hole, so to speak, in the special revenue fund, it wouldn't put the bill out of balance. I think it's important to make that clear. Representative Riccobino.
At this point, Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, when this issue came up 2 years ago, or whenever it was, 2 summers ago, I think maybe it was the summer of 2003, or... yes.
I think it was during the last 2 years ago in our budget.
Right. And I thought that the state fire marshal raised by a lot of us, because they were Boy Scout camps and 4-H camps, that the state fire marshal said he could do this without charging. So where did the state fire marshal all of a sudden say he couldn't do it without raising this fee? Because we already addressed this once, and it was voluntarily removed by the state fire marshal's office, if I recall correctly. Representative Solberg, do you remember that?
Mr. Chair, I don't remember all the details of the discussion 2 years ago, but I know it was a a very contentious issue, and I know the fire department, the fire marshal at that particular time, I think agreed to that. He probably didn't have any choice. But you know, if we want efficiencies in government, then we say we get the job done and be more efficient in it. So I had to do that in my classroom when I was teaching as well, and more responsibilities on teachers as they go from 27 in the classroom to 35 in their classroom. They have to, we keep saying, well, adjust, become more efficient. Maybe there's some efficiencies within the fire marshal. You know, if I had my way about it, we'd go back to the way they were funded to begin with, and that is the surcharge on the insurance, everyone's insurance. And we're still paying that, it's just that they're not getting the money. That's going to the general fund now, is my understanding, from a couple of years ago. So I think there was all kinds of resources available for the fire marshal, just that we stole their money and put it in the general fund and said, well, now you got to come up with a fee for it. And this is a way to help protect those. Keep in mind also that in the spreadsheet, we're not taking all of that particular money, just the portion for the small mom-and-pop resorts and the small dormitories. And Mr. Chairman, quite frankly, I don't know what I don't think staff has had a chance to know what percentage this is. I am leaving in an additional fee for the large dormitories if they're above 35 or more rooms.
Other discussion to the amendment? All right, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Solberg A78 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, amendment is adopted. The next amendment that I have is the A65 amendment. Representative McNamara moves the A65 amendment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is basically House File 928, Representative Soderstrom's bill that would reestablish a parole board for those convicted of a nonviolent crime and ones who had not previously been convicted of a felony. It has some potential possible savings for the department depending on the number of inmates that would be paroled. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you want me to try and explain it or if you'd rather have Representative Soderstrom, actually, she is in the audience. If you wanted her to come forward and give a little bit of background, it might be more efficient for the committee.
Representative McNamara, I think I would like that. Members, we do have possession of the freestanding parole board bill as well, and I guess I thought that this would be an appropriate time with public safety here, the Omnibus Public Safety Bill, to be talking about this issue if someone was going to offer an amendment. So, Representative Soderstrom, if you could come forward, maybe you can go through the amendment since this is actually your bill.
Mr. Chair,
Representative McNamara.
Thank you. I think there's one small technical on line 3 of the amendment. I believe it should say page 9 after line 22. I meant to bring it up to staff, but I believe that should say after line 22.
Okay, staff will incorporate that change. I should ask staff, is that needed? Okay, we're going to check into that. We can make an incorporation, a technical change later if we need to. Representative Soderstrom, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members, this is an amendment that is the same as House File 928, which was a parole board bill which went through several committees and was scheduled to be heard here in Ways and Means and has not had a hearing yet. It establishes a parole board of 5 highly qualified individuals who would review the inmates' records and recommend some of them for parole. According to this bill, only nonviolent offenders would qualify, and those who have not had a previous been convicted of a previous felony. And then also, in addition, this bill allows the parole board to decide if someone would qualify for the Challenge Incarceration Program, which is our boot camp. And also, the parole board could send somebody to a long-term secure drug treatment facility before considering them for a parole. And they would have to serve half of their sentence to serve time. And I would maybe take, I have my testimony that I did in front of my committee. Do you want me to do that?
If you want to do that, that would be fine.
Okay. This amendment is designed to work in conjunction with the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. And a parole board is the one missing link that we have in our sentencing structure that will serve as a check and balance to the guidelines. It will allow those who are ready to be released to be integrated back into our society instead of being warehoused unnecessarily for years. As we know, the parole board was eliminated 25 years ago and replaced with sentencing guidelines in 1989. And then as a result of this and other legislation with longer sentences, our prison population has quadrupled over the last 20 years. Minnesota has the fastest growing prison system in the U.S., and that's now before we're adding all of the new laws that we're passing this year for sex offenders and for meth. People are sitting in prison for longer periods of time, and the reforms, those are not allowed to earn eligibility for early release. There are those in prison who are no longer dangerous, and they don't need to be incarcerated any longer. And it costs us $30,000 per year per inmate. And warehousing creates a great cost to the state, and we're going to have to build more prisons because of the fact that we are growing so rapidly. And there's actually collateral damage that's being done to families and causing stress even on our human services programs. Children are placed in foster care. Parents need to be paying child support, and they can't. And wives and husbands are doing without that second income. And many, many women end up going on welfare when their husbands are placed in prison. So even, and it's very difficult for them to readjust if they're kept there longer than necessary. And there are 16 states with parole boards that have full release powers. There are 19 states with parole boards that have limited release powers. All states are looking at expanding or reinstating the parole board in some form because they realize that eliminating parole was a mistake. In 1993, Massachusetts, New Jersey, Oklahoma discussed abolishing their parole board, but they decided against it. Connecticut, Colorado, Florida did abolish their parole board, and then they reinstated it. Texas is one of the toughest correction systems in the U.S., and they have found that the parole board is a very powerful tool in its tough-minded approach to crime. Minnesota has a very limited type of release form that is sort of like a parole that's called a Challenge Incarceration Program. And it's available only to selected inmates who meet this criteria. And when they are accepted in this program, they can receive a four-year reduction on their sentence to serve if they successfully complete this program. Recently, the Department of Corrections reported that this program has been very successful and with over 372,000 prison bed days saved from 1998 to 2002. And using today's per diem, that savings would be just under $29 million. So just with that program alone, which is sort of like a parole because these people apply and are able to take 4 years off of their sentence. It's obvious by the success of that program, which is like a parole, that there is an incentive and it does work and it could save money. The state's calculations for this bill show millions of dollars could be saved in prison costs alone, using the report's conservative estimates. And in order, with my very tough on crime public safety committee, the only way that they would accept parole board is if we only said nonviolent and anyone that had had a previous felony conviction. So even with taking all of those people out, we still have people that would qualify for a parole board. And I think I will say that in my district that I sent out 16,000 surveys and I asked the question to my constituents whether they would think that the parole board should be reinstated. 75% of those respondents agreed in my district that we should reinstate the parole board. I think that I will just leave it at that. Five former Department of Corrections commissioners have told us or told me that they think that we should reinstate the parole board, and that's Ken Schoen, Jack Young, Orville Tung, Frank Wood, and then Mr. LaFleur. So I think I'll just leave it at that. If the committee has some questions, I will try to answer that.
All right. Representative Solberg.
Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a question for you. Since we have this bill before the committee, there must be a fiscal note attached to it, is there?
Representative Solberg, it's my understanding that the fiscal note on the amendment that Representative Soderstrom is bringing forth to the bill is approximately $1.2 million. I think it's $602,000 a year. Is that right, Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chairman, I understand it takes out $602,000 from the for funding the board, but Mr. Representative Soderstrom also stated that there was a savings in this, and so is it a tail savings or is there a savings this biennium on it?
Maybe I can have Mr. Marks speak to that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, and members, our staff has had some discussion with the Department of Corrections on this. The problem is that fiscal notes cannot assume the secondary effect. You cannot assume that the parole board is going to parole anybody just because the parole board exists. And so to build savings in at this time, we know there's going to be a parole board. We know there's going to be costs. We don't know anybody's actually going to be paroled. So there is no savings built into the fiscal note at this point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, and maybe Representative Soderstrom, you indicated that there was a savings of $29 million, I thought. Again, can you give me some information on where that figure comes from and how soon we can count it?
Representative Soderstrom.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, actually, when I was saying that, if that's the savings that we've had to when we have used that challenge incarceration, the boot camp, by cutting those three or four years off the census, so there's been a savings there. And so we don't know, and I have a letter from the Department of Corrections, and because my bill takes all nonviolent and all anyone that's ever been arrested for a felony, there are not that many people that would qualify, but there are enough. A total of 128 offenders would be eligible for review. And so that's the letter that I have here. And so we don't know that all of them would qualify, but if you have 50 people is more than $1 million. So it really would pay if there's that many, and we feel that there would be that many. I mean, again, we can't project because we don't know. I mean, maybe all those 128 wouldn't qualify, but it seemed like that these are the people that are in there right now that must be low-level crimes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, as I've visited each of the prisons, I remember St. Cloud having, or St. Stillwater, I guess, having a section where there were people that were incarcerated for longer sentences, but were, you know, harmless because they were 90 years old for taking up a bed. Would they be eligible for a patrol to be released and parole and released to their families? Maybe I stretched 90 years, maybe they're 72 years old, but they were elderly people. And
Representative Soderstrom.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Representative Solberg, my original parole board bill would have looked at people over 60 years old, and because my committee said that they would not pass this bill unless it was anybody that had never been in prison before or convicted of felony or nonviolent. I'm sure some of those are nonviolent. They might be 90 years old. But the one thing about this amendment is that at every year the parole board has to come before the House of Representatives and the Senate and give a report about the number of people released and any suggestions. And I would certainly think that that might be a suggestion, a good idea, that we look at people that are over 90 years old or over 75, perhaps.
Mr. Chairman, since I'm over 60, I don't want to have the age 60 because I think I could still be dangerous. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Albert,
what I'm trying my best is
is to add that there's a policy issue here, but we're adopting the policy issue based on, you know, savings or projected savings. But usually when we have the projected savings, we have some kind of a fiscal note someplace along the line that someone does some estimating. We do that all the time, and that's why I asked you the question whether there was a fiscal note associated with the bill that's before our committee instead of just the amendment.
Well, yes, there is a fiscal note, as Mr. Marks said, that shows a $602,000 cost per year for the biennium for implementing the bill. House file is at 952, whatever the House file number is for this particular bill. It does not show any specific savings, of which I'm aware of, for the reasons that Mr. Marks cited, that you can't prove that the parole board is going to actually release anyone, though I would suspect that it will. But just the way we do the notes, as you know, we can't make that assumption.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Abrams.
Chair, Representative Soderstrom, I wish that my friend Representative Mariani were in the room. One of the reasons that we went to sentencing guidelines was to eliminate racial bias in sentencing so that there would be a band, and if you are convicted within that band, white, black, anything else, you are going to be sentenced, except under extraordinary conditions for upward or downward departure, to a sentence within that band. One of the things that concerns me about, and there's been studies of racial bias, I think the Supreme Court had one in 2001, 2002, I think that Justice Page was the chair of that shows that there may be some racial bias in how crimes are being prosecuted and how crimes are being charged. So one of the things that does concern me about this amendment, even if we wanted to go down the parole board route, and I'm not quite sure if we're going to do that or if we ought to be there, is that when you take a look at who's being made eligible for parole, you know, what is the racial makeup of people who have not been convicted of a violent crime as defined elsewhere in the section, have not been previously convicted of a felony, and somehow there is a determination that there's been a profound change in an individual's character? Are we allowing racial bias that was supposedly taken out of sentencing decisions to be able to seep back into the system through parole decisions? And I think that that's a pretty important question that I wish policy committees had an opportunity to deal with rather than be in the Ways and Means Committee. But in order to be able to vote on this, I think that that's an important question that has to be answered.
Representative Soderstrom.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abrams, one of the supporters of this bill is Representative Ellison. And the report that he had is that they had hoped that sentencing guidelines would make a difference, and it has not. It has gotten worse instead of better. So sentencing guidelines did not help with that problem. And, you know, I would say that it's interesting when you look at people that are in prison, and I am involved somewhat. I think most of you know that I do a jail ministry in my community. There's a lot of plea bargaining that's done, and so there are people that maybe don't even go to prison because they plea bargain or they rat on somebody. I don't know what else you call it, but there are people that don't go to prison because they gave out evidence about somebody else, and there are people that spend a lot of money for an attorney that don't go to prison also, and many of the people that are in prison, perhaps if they could have spent $30,000-$40,000 for their own attorney, they could have not had to go to prison. And I have seen those public defenders with their stack of files, and they may spend 15 minutes with somebody, and that's all the time they've got to give to that prisoner, and he goes to prison. The next person that the judge hears has an attorney that he spent a lot of money, you know, and I shouldn't be saying that because public defenders do an outstanding job, but they are very much overworked.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, Representative Soderstrom, haven't we got some information from the Department of Correction in regards to the fiscal note? I know they can't book the savings, but didn't they give some estimates that actually put the revenue at a very much a positive, that they had, didn't they have an estimate like 80 beds would possibly be able to be paroled, and didn't they have the potential of a savings of $2.4 million a year as the offset of the $600,000 of annual costs?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Representative McNamara. Yes, I do. And I do have a letter from Corrections, and they're talking about 80. They say that right now, if they looked at over the date they wrote this, April 5th, that there are a total of 128 offenders would be eligible for review. And they didn't spend a whole lot of time, but it was kind of a quick report. And so there, and then they're projecting then next year 80 beds. So when you multiply that out, yes, there's a saving.
Representative McNamara?
No follow-up.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman.
Would you like to share with us your point of view relative to this particular amendment?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, there are members from the Department of Corrections, the county attorneys, in the room. If you choose to hear from them, I think that some of the glowing reports from Representative Soderstrom would be refuted. It's my recollection from our two hearings that we had on this in our committee that at most the 80 individuals out of our 8,200 prisoners in this state would have the ability to apply to the board, and no more than 40 of those might be eligible for it. The committee needs to understand that the press release that came out over the weekend suggesting that Minnesota has rampant incarceration going on. Minnesota is the lowest of all states in the United States with the percent of correctional population incarcerated. We are in single digits. We are at 8.9% of our potential population that could be incarcerated. 8.9% are in fact incarcerated. The rest are already out on probation or some kind of status after incarceration. We have the highest percentage of folks in the United States already on probation, the least amount actually incarcerated. An interesting statistic I heard during your testimony, and I'll close with this thought, is that in those, and by the way, we did move away from the parole board. We had it once in our history. We moved away to a system that provides more certainty, and as Representative Abrams indicated, probably more fairness in actual sentencing. Of those states that have returned to parole boards in the United States, roughly, I think it was two-thirds of the folks in prison are there for parole violations.
Representative Smith, I don't know if you know the answer to this. Maybe somebody that's been in the legislature longer than you or I, but why did we do away with the parole board in the state of Minnesota? Do you have any information in regard to that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not a historian on that issue, but I think it was to get away from some of the evil that Representative Abrams described, have a more fair system, have one that is more certain that when a prisoner goes to prison, and by the way, you have to be a pretty bad person to get put in prison in the state of Minnesota, that there'd be some certainty about how much time you'd be there, and lessen the anxiety of the prisoner. They'd know precisely when they would be getting out. And that and the fairness issue, I believe, were two of the primary reasons.
Okay.
Representative Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was reading through the amendment and was trying to find out how we're handling the
supervision at the county level. I find on page 6, subdivision 1, where it talks about parole supervision, it says, other than in Community Corrections Act counties, the Commissioner of Corrections shall exercise supervision. So that would imply to me then that there would be some counties that would have to be picking up that cost. And when we were having the discussion of the fiscal note, the question that came to my mind would be, what would be the local costs and how are those being covered? Namely, parole officers and other services that are given.
Representative Soderstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, I did add two lines on page 5 that when they report back to the legislature, like next January, they would report the cost to counties of supervising and providing services to the parolees. And they would be paroled just the same way that they are depending on what kind of a county they are. We had to correct that after the first draft of my parole board bill, but they would be supervised just the same way as they are now, whether it's county or through corrections.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, they report back, but what I'm asking is that I'm assuming, or I know there would be costs in some counties, and could you clarify what you mean then, because I'm assuming that they would have costs that would be incurred, and how would those costs be covered? Would they receive a state grant, or would they be able to levy for those costs, or would they just have to eat those costs?
Representative Soderstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, if this board, if we pass this bill, it will take us months before this gets going. And I think when you're talking about maybe 30 or 40 extra people being released, they certainly would be the cream of the crop. They would not be, chances are these would not be people that would be as dangerous perhaps as some because they've been nonviolent offenders. So, and I do have that report back. I would say that this board could not even hardly start until perhaps October or November. And so it takes a while before these people would be appointed, highly qualified people. It's a well-paying job. It would take several months before that is done. And then by the time they discussed how they were going to do it and started interviewing people, it would be late fall. And so there wouldn't be that much of an impact this year. And then we can deal with that in January of next year.
Representative Carlson.
Chairman, I hear what the author of the amendment is saying, but the effective date, it says sections 1 to 8 are effective the day following final enactment. It sounds to me like this process would be moving a lot faster than several months out. And you're talking now 40, but the earlier discussion was 80. I still have the question whether it's 40 or 80 if this bill is in effect the day after final enactment. How are those costs being covered for the counties?
Representative Soderstrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Silver, there's some things you just don't know. It doesn't matter. I can't. I met with probation officers before I came down to session, and you know, I just don't think that it's, that a few more people spread through the whole state of Minnesota. We have 87 counties.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Smith.
Representative Carlson raises a good point. There surely would be local impact or county impact. The author has not asked, that I'm aware, has not asked for a local impact fiscal note. And her bill in chief was passed on to this committee. You have it before you. I don't think you have the information you need to attach this amendment. And I would also ask if you would take a couple minutes of testimony from Mr. Kingray, County Attorney, see what his thoughts would be on the impact.
I'll be happy to do that, Representative Smith. Could Mr. Kingray come forward? Mr. Kingray, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Kingray, speaking on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Thank you for the opportunity to testify with regard to our position on this bill. This will be the third time this session we've testified on the bill. Our board of directors has reviewed last year's draft of this bill and the current draft of the bill, and on both occasions came out in opposition to the bill. Much has been said about the current Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission. As truth in sentencing, like individuals that commit like crimes will get like sentences. And that was the whole effort behind the truth in sentencing bill. People in the community know when someone is convicted of a crime, they know how long that person will go away for. And in Minnesota, for every 2 days in prison, you work, you get off 1 day early. So basically your sentence is reduced by a third. But again, those individuals in our communities know when individuals are going to be released from prison. Also, I think the most important thing here, and one of our major concerns with the parole board, is we believe that victims will be re-victimized. Every time there is a parole board hearing on an individual, that victim will be re-victimized. They will obviously, depending on their interests, attend parole board hearings and voice their opinion. Also, keep in mind, under this bill, they can be released up to one half of their sentence. So an individual that is sentenced for 9 years under the current scheme can be released after two-thirds of that sentence, after six. Under this bill, that person can be released after 3 years. So you go away for 9 years, you're now back on the streets in 3 years. In my review of the states that have parole boards, over the last 20 years, the information that I've seen indicates that states are either moving away from parole boards or limiting their authority. In fact, during the 90s, Wisconsin got away from their parole board. I did talk to someone from law enforcement there, and I asked him why. And he said because people were being released from prison and reoffending, going back into prison. And I think Representative Abrams was exactly correct in terms of the type of individuals that are likely to be paroled. They're going to be individuals that have a strong support system in the community, strong family support system, and those are the individuals that we believe are most likely to be paroled. There's a number of issues with regard to the individuals that would be subject to a parole. One category that would be eligible for a parole is meth manufacturing offenders. There's a number of others which we don't have the time, I believe, to get through tonight. Again, I will just close by saying, in the previous testimony, a lot has been said about the savings that this bill would achieve, a lot of talk about prison overcrowding and so forth, and I would submit to you the most important thing before us is public safety. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, it doesn't have to do with not that Mr. Kingry's up there, and since I saw there was a surcharge, I just wanted to ask him while he's up there, how much does the law library surcharge bring in for statewide for the county attorneys?
Mr. Kingray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina.
Tell me Swigum, it's easier.
Members of the committee, I know that's been a long-standing interest of yours. You expressed it very directly to me last session in the hallway. I believe, my understanding, I may be wrong, I believe it's a $5 surcharge that goes to the...
I want to ask, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Kingry, how much does the law library fee in the state of Minnesota bring in statewide every year?
Mr. Kingray.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, I don't know.
Rukavina,
I apologize. I do not know that.
Mr. Kingray, you seem to know a lot about a lot of things, but you don't know how much law library fee brings in, which is totally just for your county attorneys. Now, my understanding is that a lot of the law libraries are going to cave in on themselves if you buy any more books. So how much of the law library fee, Mr. Kingery. Can you get me that information before this bill gets to the floor? And I'd like to know how much of the law library fee you're not spending on law libraries.
Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina, my understanding is county attorney offices get none of that fee. Mm-hmm. We don't get that fee.
No, it doesn't. It goes to your law library for the county attorney.
It goes to the...
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Rukavina, it goes to the county law library that everybody in the community has access to. It is not a personal library for the county attorney or the city attorney or anybody
Mr.
else.
Chair, I know that, but it was very much supported by the County Attorneys Association, which is in opposition to this, so I'm hammering you while you're up here, see? Because you deserve it. Because you don't have the intestinal fortitude, Mr. Kingery, to oppose some of these laws when you know your organization opposes some of the things that we're doing in this bill. Now, this one. So I want to know, and I want you to get me this information, how much is raised statewide for law libraries in each county, and how much is actually spent on law libraries. Because my understanding, members, is that Dakota County has so much money in their law library fund that they have to have a special off-pass for the librarian to make more than the governor. But that's okay, because the first lady's making more now, too, under this bill. So, you know. So I want that information, Mr. Kingery. So I'm put you on another path so you don't oppose this.
Mr.
Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rubina, I guess I've got two duties tonight. I wanted to make sure I pronounce your name correctly when I'm anxious. And secondly, I will get you that information before this bill hits the floor.
I'm going to call you Queen Black pretty quick, buddy, instead of King Gray. So,
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kingery, you had made the point that under current law that we give people that have committed like crimes, like sentences. So I just want to understand. So all the people that commit like crimes are the same, and they're not individuals, and we shouldn't look at them, that maybe some of them have reformed, that we should just say automatically, you're not a human being, you should just be treated the same as everybody else and be blindly given this sentence and not be looking at the opportunity that maybe there's 80 individuals out of the 8,000 in the criminal justice system that deserve a look at this situation.
Ms. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, it's difficult to make that determination, and that is one of the reasons why the state did go to a determinant sentencing, the truth in sentencing, because no one has that ability to make those determinations, and that's why we moved to our current scheme 25 years ago.
Representative McNamara.
One more follow-up, as long as sure. You brought up that we eliminated the parole board 25 years ago, and Representative Abrams brought up the point, do we have more minorities in the prison system today since the elimination of the poll board, or do we have less?
Mr. Kingery.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McNamara, I would defer to those individuals in the Department of Corrections.
All right. Any other? Representative Abrams.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Kingery, as a county attorney, would it be more or less likely that you'd be able to enter into plea bargains if this provision were in place? Because if I were representing a defendant who had maybe three or four charges, and you know how crimes get charged, of course, is, you know, I was talking to Representative Mariani, is one of the problems of racial bias. But then you get into the question of plea bargaining if this were into effect. And if you were a good public defender, if you were a good defense attorney, you try to make sure that somehow your client, if they pled to a crime, would be shoehorned into this. And if you are a good prosecutor, you may be more likely to go to trial in order to prevent somebody getting into this definition. So would this lead to less plea bargaining, and what effect would that have on how a county attorney would go about their business?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Kingery,
Representative Abrams, from the discussions and the feedback that I've heard from our county attorneys, is I believe that there would be fewer plea bargains, and frequently, as you indicated, people are charged with three or four counts, three or four particular offenses. A lot of times that may be plea bargained down into one and two. For example, on drug offenses, an individual many times is charged with both sale and possession because sale is sometimes difficult to prove. Because sale means you may have to give up your informant, which is a major issue in the rural areas where we may not have a lot of informants. Frequently, those county attorneys will drop the sale and only go on the possession. With something like this, it's my belief, based on the discussions I've had with county attorneys, that there would be fewer plea bargains, and as a result, more trials.
Are there any other questions? Representative Anderson.
Representative Smith. Is your bill pony funded?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, the bill is yes. We're on the parole amendment right now. That would have an impact. The bill is currently funded.
How much do we save?
Representative Anderson.
On this, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, that's the question that has not been answered by the fiscal note, in part because the local impact has not been covered by a fiscal note. So I can't answer that.
Follow up, Representative Anderson?
Well, there's got to be some startup costs here.
Oh, well.
Representative Smith.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I believe it's $620,000 per year startup cost, so $1.2 million for the biennium.
Is that funded?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, no. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I guess I've been waiting patiently to hear where the author proposes to take from the rest of the bill to fund that $1.2 million. I have not heard that yet.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Soderstrom.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, members, in my amendment it says that the funds will come out of corrections, and there was a line item on our yellow sheet that talked about projections under corrections, and that certainly would be an area that corrections can take it out of their budget because they would have less people, and so that would make the difference. And I would just like to say, just in finishing up here, is that we are looking at building new prisons every other year, and I just think that we need to look at those people. That's an expensive bed, $30,000 a year. If you believe in profound change, you have to believe that some people do, when they hit prison, they do make a change in their life, and they decide they don't want this life of crime anymore, and so I think we should not be warehousing those people. I want to repeat again, 5 former commissioners of corrections say we should reestablish the parole board. Judge Dean in Cambridge, the staggering sentencing, also is a support. Sandy Keith wrote a letter in support, a former chief justice in support of the parole board, And I understand with county attorneys, they are elected, they want to be tough on crime, but I think that we need to look at this. Minnesota Teen Challenge has 300 people in that program right now. Half of those people in Minnesota Teen Challenge were sent there by the courts, saving several from our county jail that are in Minnesota Teen Challenge had 6 years of prison time over their heads, and they are spending 1 year in Minnesota Teen Challenge instead. And so there are people that have profound change in their life that could be released, and we would not have to be paying $30,000 a year for them. I am mentoring somebody that is in Lionel Lakes right now. He's on work release every day. He goes with a crew of about 5 or 6 with one foreman. He's building houses. We're spending $30,000 this year, $30,000 next year. And I just believe that there are some people like this Curtis that could be paroled, and they would not be a danger to society because he has a job, a place to live. When he gets out, it would reunite him with his family, could be claiming child support. Thank you.
Representative Greiling, do you have a question? Representative Smith, you have Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I have a quick question of the author of the amendment. I noticed the fiscal notice dated 3705. And my question is, the amendment that's now before us, is that the same wording, the same amendment or bill that was developed for the fiscal note, or that the fiscal note was developed for?
Representative Soderstrom?
I wonder if I could... The fiscal note is $602,000 per year to establish this, and it has to do with having five people on the parole board and their salaries, and setting up an office and having a secretary or two, and that would be the cost of the parole board. Mm-hmm. And so that's the same, and it just depends on how many people are released and where the savings would be.
Mr. Chairman, I...
Representative Carlson.
Still not clear in terms of the answer to my question. Both bills set up a parole board, but is this the same amendment that the fiscal note was developed for? That would be pretty much a yes or no answer.
Representative Soderstrom, can you give us a yes or no answer to the question?
Representative Soderstrom.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Silver, if...
Carlson, you got sorry. Scandinavians mixed up here. Right.
I'm sorry. You know, it is a different... this amendment is different because I took out all of the nonviolent and anyone that had been convicted before of a felony. But that doesn't change the cost, because the parole board costs the same then as it would with the changes. The changes I made don't change that cost of a parole board. There would have been a lot more people released, of course, if you were looking at everyone that might qualify. You know,
Representative Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Soderberg, there's a... Soderstrom, I'm sorry. I'm having trouble with names today. You can call me anything you want, just don't call me late for supper, okay? You got five members of this parole board at $100,419 a year. Who came up with the figure of $100,000 salary for the five people to sit down and evaluate these? I mean, I hope I qualify for a position.
Representative Soderstrom.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we had a lot of discussion. This is a very, very important position, mm-hmm. and I think you want highly qualified people, and you would want highly qualified people to apply, and so the governor would have be able to pick from some very good applicants.
But Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
was it just a figure that someone picked out? But is there a standard for that salary? I mean, maybe $87,000 is a pretty good salary too.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Colbert, you know, we worked on this bill last summer and last fall. So this isn't something that I just thought up in January of this year. So we worked with quite a number of different people and discussed it. And this was, for some reason, they felt that they'd be looking at other parole boards in other states. I don't know.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Solberg, if you turn to page 2, line 10, it talks about the compensation, and it'll be 85% of a district court judge's salary. I think Representative Rukavina has told us that may possibly go up in the chair, and it goes on to explain the compensation and how it is tied to district judge salary.
Representative Kelleher.
Mr. Chair, Representative Soderstrom, I guess I'm curious. It's always interesting in Ways and Means. We tend to think we're about fiscal policy, but we end up being about regular policy, and you learn a lot in here, and I'm learning a few things about this, and
not necessarily against your idea, but I guess I'm curious how come there are so many questions coming forward about this tonight, and is there any middle way here about getting answers to questions or delaying the start of this so that there's some more time to air these questions? I guess I just... It's a pretty major piece of policy to be doing here around this committee table tonight without at least having a few more of these things answered. And like I said, I kind of actually think that the idea deserves more and better discussion, but I'm curious, what is the middle way here tonight instead of it's all or nothing? Because I'm a bit concerned that we're kind of in the all or nothing mode, and the committee didn't put it in the bill, but yet there seems to be a lot of interest in it. So Representative Soderstrom, can you give me some guidance here about what might be the middle way to preserve the intent of your idea but get some of these answers out so policymakers can really evaluate these decisions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kelleher. You know, this was discussed last year. We had a bill last year that was laid on the table. And I think that I will just be coming back next year again and starting all over, and I've spent a lot of time on this. I believe that we need a parole board. I believe that people should have an opportunity once they get to prison, and they do everything they can. They take all the classes that are required. They are perfect. That they need an opportunity to get rewarded for that. And I think that it would be a better atmosphere in our prisons. I just believe that our prisoners need that opportunity, even if it stays only 6 months off their time. It's not like you're going to let people out that are dangerous. You're going to have five very highly qualified people look at their records and decide, yes, they should have an opportunity. I will say that I'm from the rural area, and I think that our prisoners or our inmates get harsher prison sentences sometimes than those that are in the metropolitan area. And that is because whenever we have a crime in my community, it's the front page of the paper, gets lots of publicity, and the county attorney is going to be there to make sure it's a very, very strong upwards kind of departure type thing to keep the community safe. And so there is a difference, you know, in the guidelines and how different judges sentence. If we want somebody to go to Minnesota Teen Challenge in my county, we ask for a change of judges, and Judge Dean is very open to Minnesota Teen Challenge, and he often sends people to Minnesota Teen Challenge that has like a 70% success rate. That's better than what we're seeing in prison. And then I'd like to say, too, before I came down here, when I was first elected 2.5 years ago, I got a lot of literature about corrections and so forth, and I got a letter about a whole-day seminar on breaking the ice of recidivism, and it was so interesting, and I went to this conference, spent all day. So then when January came, I was very excited about what might happen, you know, some new ideas for our committee and so forth. So we don't talk about reentry, and we don't talk about recidivism, and that's two things that we really need to work on, because the reason people are coming back into our prison system is because we're not preparing them for reentry.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
Representative Soderstrom, I guess I'm attempting to help you, which is to say, is there something here that we can pull out partial win on with this? But it seems to me that your response tells me there may not be. And so I guess I'm a little bit disturbed by that, because when you want to achieve something around here, sometimes you need to take a partial win. And I'm feeling like that's not coming. Like, you know, where's this? Well, Representative Soderstrom, you just told me that there is no partial win on this. There's no putting the date out a year and starting this thing or a study or whatever. And I'm feeling like this is a big piece of policy to be doing in Ways and Means right now, tonight. And so I was trying to seek out, you know, Teen Challenge is in my district. I think it's an amazing program for those people who can do it and who can accept the premise behind what they need to do to go through the program. I think it has an amazing rate of success. I think it's wonderful in that regard. But I'm also saying here tonight that there are those of us who are interested in your idea but are looking for some guidance in how this doesn't have to be final day of an enactment with a lot of these questions hanging out there.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would say this bill very much is a compromise already, Representative Kelleher. It's been changed from being more broad-based to now only be for nonviolent criminals that have not been convicted of a previous felony. It's very much been toned down to a very small opportunity for us to begin to look at that all people are not the same when we convict them. I think Representative Soderstrom has really given a lot already, and the only way you could go any farther is to vote no.
Well, members, we've had, I think, a pretty good amount of discussion on this issue. Is there anyone else who wishes to ask questions or bring up anything else on this amendment? All right, we'll go to the vote then. Representative McNamara renews his motion that the amendment A-65 be adopted. All in favor of the A-65 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Division. All in favor of the A-65 amendment, raise your hand. All opposed, raise your hand. There being 15 ayes and 16 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't have an amendment, but I just wanted to, tonight, I just want to speak to a provision on the bottom of page 303 regarding railroad workers and injuries and criminal penalties to railroads. And just to express my thanks to Representative Smith for expressing willingness to work on a addressing a couple concerns a couple members had about the criminal portion of the penalty and its possible deleterious effect on examining safety hazards and why an injury occurred and so on and so forth. So I expect to see a consensus amendment when this reaches the floor on Thursday, but I just want to say thanks to Chairman Smith again for hearing us out as we just talked about it and just give a heads up to members that we may bring that.
All right. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to belabor this bill anymore, but I do have a couple questions on it. One of them is on page 243 on surplus property, which my committee and GovOps deals with. And I guess it's just a question in relation to, it says that the Board of Public Defense in its sole discretion can provide surplus computers to its part-time employees for their use. Representative Smith, does that mean that when we have the government computers available that they're going to allow part-time employees to use them for work, or that when they're done, we're not going to do what we do with all other government computers and send them to the surplus auction? I'm just trying to figure out, it says for their use, and you could read that to say that we're going to kind of go down the road of collusion and just say, well, you work for this agency, we're just going to give you these computers, which our committee has pretty firmly said that we are not going to go down that route, because we're going to have part-time pages come in and say, well, I have stuff on the legislative computers, when you're done with them, I'd like to have it, okay. I don't know where this ever would stop, and our committee's been very kind of bird doggish on this. Could you just give me an idea of where that came from, lines 13 through 16 on page 243?
Came from the Representative, Mr. Chairman, excuse me, Representative Seifert. It came from the County Attorney Association.
And Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry, the Board of Public Defense.
The Board of Public Defense. Representative Smith, does this basically mean that when the government computers are that we're going to just give them away to part-time employees to have forever, or does it mean that they can take them home and do government work on them and then return them to the government when they're finished? What's the legislative intent is what I'm trying to get on record, I guess.
Representative Seifert, it's the language, I think, would cover your concerns, providing the computer to its part-time employees for their use as employees of the board, doing their work.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, make it crystal clear, because the notwithstanding sections are the transfer of property transfer of government property statutes, meaning disposal of government property. So I was concerned I saw the notwithstanding statutes, but if it's your intent that these part-time folks will get to use these for government work and then they stay in possession of the government, I'm okay with that. That's your understanding.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the other question I had was on page 288. I'm not sure if a committee had voted this down or not. Not 288, 307 rather. This one is the, I know the libertarian streak of the Minnesota House in dealing with the car seats for 7 or 8 year olds or whatever it was. And I see that somehow got put into this bill. And I'm wondering, this got voted down last year, I believe, on the House floor. And I'm just wondering how this got put in the bill, or was it voted down on a policy committee somewhere along the line, or and then just got put in the omnibus bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, I believe the history of this is that it was passed by transportation policy, and the language you're seeing in the bill is a result of compromise. Compromise language between the transportation policy wanted and what the committee was looking at doing and not doing. I'm reminded that, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seifert,
I'm also reminded that the author is Representative Powell, and that there were further conversations regarding language modification with him and Representative Hillstrom on our committee.
Okay.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman, one more question.
Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chairman, I've gotten a lot of emails and letters on some type of Hillstrom language. I know you've referenced her many times of having ownership in this bill about anti-privatization or anti-Appleton language. Is that anywhere in this bill? Is there any language that would disallow or prohibit, inhibit, or otherwise cause problems for the Prairie Correctional Facility to hold Minnesota prisoners?
Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, depending on your viewpoint, either sadly or happily, no, there is no language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all my questions.
Representative Paymeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that when we voted for an amendment earlier, that I understand fully what we voted on. The Representative Solberg had this amendment on the inspection fees, and I just want to be clear that for my own conscience, in voting for that amendment, Representative Solberg, did we say that smaller hotels or cabins, resorts, didn't have to have fire inspections, or was it just the elimination of the fees?
Representative Solberg.
It's my understanding it's just the elimination of the fees that the fire department is still required to inspect them. I think it's every 3 years, I believe. And the chair is nodding his head yes on that. So you'll be safe when you stay at the resort. You'll still be safe when you stay at the resort.
That's not what the section that was deleted says, so
I guess between now and the House floor, we'll have to get some clarification. Well, Mr. Chairman, it was surely not my intent that when the council alongside of me says they still have to do the inspection.
Any other discussion to the bill? Representative Rukavina.
Chair, I'm just curious, Mr. Carter's back up at the desk, out of the House, then the House bill recommendations of $1,655,000,000 approximately, Mr. Carter, for the biennium. How much of that is raised in fees, and how much is
out of just the general income tax or sales tax.
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, Representative Riccovina, you can see that the fees offset the totals, the revenue adjustments for the general fund. That's total for the biennium is close to $26 million. It's $25.954 million for the biennium.
Chair.
Representative Riccovina.
So I'm understanding you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Carter. I'm asking. So in the total of, you know, $817 million and $837 million over 06 and 07, there's only $28 million in fees in the $817 and the $837 million?
Mr. Carter.
Mr. Chair, yes, that's the, you said to, you know, what the fees compared, these are the general fund fees that are in there. And because the total spending was about $1.681 billion, then you subtract the fees out, or the revenue adjustments, I should say, and that was about $26 million for the biennium.
But Mr.
Representative,
Mr. Carter, so I understand you, and you're understanding me. That's just the increase you're talking about. I'm saying total fees that fund things in here. I mean, like there's a. As an example of a $10 surcharge on the $60 previous surcharge is part of that $28 million, right? But you don't count the $60 surcharge. I want to know what all of that is, counting all of that. Is it only $28 million bucks?
Mr. Carter.
Verbs of Riccovina, you know, that one is a tough one because we passed the other fee increases in the last biennium. We passed quite a few where we raised that surcharge, and we would have to go back to look at what the total is. And that money just goes to the general fund and is appropriate to the general fund. You know, it increased our target a couple of years ago, I know. But we would have to go back and actually figure that out. You know, because last year, 2 years ago, the surcharge did go up. I believe it went from $35 to the $60. That was one of the increases, and we had a lot of other increases in some of the court fees.
Well, Mr. Chair, and that's what I'm trying to get at. I believe in there were four, depending on who you ask, $400 to $600 million in the fee increases last biennium, and the majority of that was in health and human service and in public safety finance. And so I've just been curious as to know now how often I have to be arrested in order for the judge to make his house payment instead of, you know, because I'm just curious on that. So if you can get that to me before this bill gets to the floor, so I can have some fun with Representative Smith.
Any other discussion? Representative Seifert.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know that the hour is late, but I feel very uncomfortable with having the items on page 307 in the bill. My understanding is that is a separate bill moving through, and I understand people like omnibus bills. They have all sorts of different things in them. I am supporting Representative Smith's bill, but that piece disturbs me, having that in the bill and not traveling on its own, just so the members can have an up or down vote on that particular issue rather than globbing it into the omnibus bill. So I would like to remove that Section 2, Subdivision 5, and have this discussion on its own so he doesn't have 2 hours of floor debate on this one little piece when he gets his omnibus bill to the floor. I haven't had time to talk to everyone except because I didn't even know that it was in the bill until half an hour ago or 20 minutes ago. Page 307.
Representative Seifert, are you making a motion?
Was Representative Smith comfortable if we make the motion to strike that and have it travel on its own as a bill?
Mr. Chairman, it's missed all deadlines elsewhere. It's not a live bill any longer. If you take it out of this bill, it's gone.
So, Mr. Chair, you know, I just don't think it belongs in an omnibus bill where people have problems with certain things. To me, it's like putting mandatory seatbelts in an omnibus bill and say, well, be a team player and vote for this omnibus bill or mandatory motorcycle helmets or whatever. The House has had a tradition of not supporting these kind of things, that we have standalone votes on these items to put them into omnibus bills on the floor, but not necessarily to have them incorporated in. So, you know, I would prefer to have it out of there.
Are you moving that?
Representative Seifert, I guess I'm trying to understand. Are you making an oral amendment, or are you speaking of a concern for the floor?
I'm able to take it out right now, because and if somebody wants to put it back in on the floor, that's fine, but I just don't feel that it's right to have that bill incorporated in this bill. So I will move to strike on page 307, section 2, sub 5.
Okay, Representative Seifert moves an oral amendment, page 307, delete section 2. Discussion of the Seifert oral amendment. Representative Paymark.
Mr. Chair, I would just speak against the motion. I mean, we've heard testimony about the impact of children not being properly restrained in automobiles and the kinds of physical injuries that can occur unless a child is has the appropriate restraints. And the statistics are staggering when you look at this nationwide. So I think that this is a step backwards relative to public safety and protecting our kids from crashes. There's no perfect way, Representative Seifert, of saying how old, how much weight, and how tall someone must be. This was, as Representative Smith said, compromise language that happened in the Transportation Committee. You know, Representative Powell, who was an who drives an ambulance, spoke to the various kinds of crashes where children get injured when they're just in regular seatbelts or in seatbelts for adults. And I think if there's a way that we can mitigate against that, then we should do it. And I think this was a good compromise. We should both know.
Representative Dorman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would hope it doesn't kill it, Marty, because it don't always win very much. But I would speak in support of Representative Seifert's motion. The part that I find most egregious about that is on 308. I think you're coming from rural Minnesota. You can't tell you the number of times that whether it's been my wife back there with our boys or me back there with our boys when we would have a pickup and then you throw a bunch of leaves in there and ride out to the place to dump them or something. And I understand the danger of that. I mean, I was born at night, but wasn't last night. You know, I don't need the state to tell me what to do or not. That's just really, really overreaching, I think. Long story short, I would support the Seifert Amendment to take this out.
Other discussion to the amendment? Representative Smith.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I would just make one correcting comment to Representative Seifert's statement. I don't recall this provision being voted on at all last session, and I'm informed by a member of the audience who monitors these things that it was neither voted for nor against. It wasn't voted on last session. So in his zeal to represent this as having been up for a vote and voted down, that did not occur, I think.
Representative Seifert.
Chair, I thought Representative Segrin had something very similar to this last year. I don't believe it was a roll call, I'm the chief vote counter on the House floor, and I don't forget things easily. I will certainly go back in the journal and look for it, but I remember Representative Segrin had one, and Representative Rhodes had one where you couldn't have more than one kid in the car that we spent a lot of time on as well, and that got voted down. But I know Representative Segrin had something very similar to this. I will take the comments back for now, pending me doing the research, but I'm fairly sure that Representative Segrin had an amendment similar to this. Maybe it's not the exact same language.
Other discussion. Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, is there an appropriation in here for all the state patrol cars for a scale? You've got on page 307, it says that a child less than 1 year weighing less than 20 pounds, when a state patrol makes a stop, are they going to bring out the scale? And I guess, Mr. Chairman and Representative Smith, the other question is, how does the State Patrol or any officer making a stop know what the age of the child is? Are we going to require now that...
ID.
I guess the question is, how does the officer know? I mean, the parent says, well, the child is 8 years old, does the, I mean, we the officer have to then take the word of the parent or the person who's driving the vehicle? Or are we going to try to institute some other system so that the officer who makes the stop has some way of validating whether what the child's age is? I mean, I'm trying to think of what the officer is going to do with this language in statute.
Representative Smith.
Oh. Mr. Chairman, Representative Krenke, I think you can put the worry out of your mind that you would have to have a whole new system of government to try to enforce this rule. I trust the citizens of Minnesota, if and when stopped under this situation, to honestly tell the State Patrol how old their child is in the automobile.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
Representative Cavina.
Mr. Chair, to that point, Representative Krenke, page 315, a microchip is implanted in all new babies in the state. Left foot buttock. Or left buttock. I can't, it's there somewhere, I thought.
Is that a Rukavina amendment?
No, it's supported by most of the people in the room. So.
Well, I don't always find myself agreeing with Representative Paymar, but I think I actually do in this case. So this will be an interesting vote. Other discussion? All right, all in favor of the Seifert amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
I'll call for a division. All in favor, raise your hand.
Keep them up, please.
All right, all opposed, raise your hand.
Marty, I don't know why you can't be a team player.
Okay. There being 15 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Other discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion. Oh, Representative Krenke.
Mr. Chairman, I am going to voice my opposition to the bill. There's a 25-cent, quote-unquote, fee increase for 911. I don't think having a telephone in the state of Minnesota is an option, so a $22 million increase in taxes for the citizens of the state of Minnesota, in my mind, is not an option, not a fee, but rather a tax increase. So I'm going to be voting against this bill for that reason.
Representative Solberg.
To that point of a clarification, is the 25-cent fee increase strictly related for the service provided for 911? Or does it go to the general fund? 800 megahertz?
Representative Solberg, it's my understanding it does not go to the general fund. It's not a general fund appropriation. But I can ask Mr. Carger for more details. Mr. Carger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Solberg, the 911 fee pays off the prior year obligations of the telephone companies, and it's also used to pay for the state's cost in building the statewide public safety radio system.
So, Mr. Chairman, the 911 fee goes to the areas of the state. I mean, I pay the extra quarter that's funded for those parts of the state that don't have it, right? The 911 or the backbone, the 800 megahertz.
Mr. Carter.
Sorry, but we have an expert here, too, Mr. Chair, from the Public Safety Department that would probably give further classification.
Mr. Chair, I don't want that. I don't want to be clarified that much.
All right. Other discussion. Other discussion. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Smith renews his motion that House File 1, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The bill is passed. Members, just a quick announcement. We will be meeting tomorrow night. I'm guessing we will be taking up the Jobs Omnibus Bill and the Health Omnibus Bill. We will get an exact schedule out
for notice. I'm thinking time maybe around 6 o'clock, but we'll stand by for the official notice. With that, me is adjourned.
Representative Stolberg.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, maybe Representative Dorman could remind us what room we're in for the next...
Representative Dorman, where's the bonding committee?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where the bonding committee is going to meet, but we're going to meet at 6:30 or 10 minutes from now.
10 minutes?
10 minutes in whatever room was in the notice.
10 minutes and 10 minutes for bonding committee.
Okay, now.
All right. Meeting adjourned.